Ready to make your money work smarter? Kraken is the crypto platform trusted by over 13 million people worldwide. With Kraken, you can instantly buy and sell crypto, power up your trades with advanced tools, and get 24/7 support from real humans anytime you need help. Kraken has been around for more than 14 years and was voted the best crypto exchange of 2025 by Forbes. Getting started is simple. Create an account, fund it, and place your first trade. Start today at kraken.com.
And we are back with another episode of the Kyle Anzalone Show and wrapping up an extremely, insane lot of news all week. But today there has been an absolute avalanche of it. And I am very happy that I have Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson with me today to try to break everything down. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm tired.
Yes, I think we all are hoping maybe for like a nice Friday, easy Friday, but there is a lot going on today. So, of course, the big news is that Iran said the Strait of Hormuz is open. Donald Trump echoed this, posting on True Social that the Strait of Hormuz is open, saying that it's never going to go again and that we're going to quickly wrap up negotiations here. But until negotiations are over, the U.S. blockade on Iran is going to remain. So, Colonel Wilkerson, what do you make of it? It sounds like a fairly optimistic take that we're almost done with this. Iran seems to be giving up everything. They're reopening the strait without the U.S. removing their blockade. Did Donald Trump's pressure finally get to the point that the Iranians are throwing in the towel?
Actually, there is no blockade. And actually, Iran is still very much in control of passage north and south through the Strait of Hormuz. And what Trump is doing is trying to fashion a victory where there is at best a stalemate, and at worst, and I think this is closer to reality, a loss, because Iran has stood up to the empire. Iran has done major damage to the empire, which propaganda is protecting right now. In other words, we've learned from Bibi Netanyahu, we're not telling the American people how many dead we have, how many wounded we have, how many billions of dollars of very sophisticated equipment, 250 million plus in a drone they just shot down, we have lost. So Donald is trying to fashion some way of extricating himself from this really stupid decision he made, basically on the advice of Bibi Netanyahu. And at the same time, Bibi's trying to prevent him from doing too much damage to his campaign in Lebanon and ultimately his campaign against Iran in the process. So there are no victors or losers here, but there are people who weren't expected to come out in as good a fashion as they have, and that's Iran.
Absolutely. And I did read from, I'm trying to read the Iranian press to see what Tehran is saying, because Donald Trump, again, is painting this as an absolute loss for the Iranians. And they made a couple of points. One, they said they were about to break the ceasefire, that, the situation had gotten so bad in Lebanon that Tehran was going to start firing missiles at Israel. And it was only at that point that Donald Trump agreed to impose the ceasefire in Lebanon and make Israel abide by it. And Iran also says that even though the Strait of Hormuz is reopened, they're still going to be charging fees on the ships passing through, which would suggest that they are still in full control of that waterway. So what do you make of those Iranian statements? Is that just bluster and propaganda from Tehran, or does that maybe reflect more of the reality of the situation?
Well, I think they're accurate statements, which will take a great deal of military force for us to reverse. And I don't think we have any intent of using that kind of force. I hope we don't anyway. We've positioned some force there to break a loggerhead if you have to. But I don't think we're going to do that. I hope not anyway. And Iran, as I said, is pretty much in control of the strait. And as you said, they are getting wages for ships passing through the strait, just like the Egyptians do for the Suez Canal. And I think the Panamanians do for the Panama Canal also. So it's not anything untoward that they're doing. And we have a new player in this now. And this new player is very, very important for people to understand. And this player is the number one economy in the world, and in many other respects of national power, the number one power in the world. And that's China. Not only has China, I've learned, I think, accurately, that China is providing them with exquisite intelligence from a satellite that they are dedicating to them, much the same way we gave Ukraine access to a satellite a few months ago that allowed Ukraine to target very, very wrongly, in my mind, Russia's nuclear response capabilities and nuclear early warning capability. That we did that was absolutely unbelievable, but we did. And this is a very sophisticated satellite. I'm told the Chinese satellite is even more sophisticated. So Iran is getting exquisite intelligence on the entire region. And if it has to take up arms again, as it were, and attack more targets in the region, it will have excellent targeting advice and targeting data from that satellite.
So, Colonel Wilkerson, one of the concerns I have here is that, as you said, if the U.S. were to negotiate a deal now, it's not going to be a deal that Donald Trump will try to portray anything as a victory. But I think it's going to be very transparent to the American people that this isn't the case. And we've also seen the U.S. and Israel use negotiations two times in the past year as cover to position troops in the Middle East to attack Iran. The current U.S. currently has the USS George H.W. Bush aircraft carrier strike group on its way to the Middle East, along with, I think it's the USS Botzer amphibious ready group, which includes the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit, which was conducting drills on how to handle nuclear material as they transited from Hawaii on over to the Middle East. So I know you say it's the worst possible outcome that the U.S. would choose to escalate this war and possibly launch a ground invasion. But as my boss over at the Libertarian Institute, Scott Horton, said this week, it's important not to underestimate the stupidity of the Trump administration at this point. So could we possibly see the U.S. actually, you know, just doing whatever it takes to drag this ceasefire out until we are militarily prepared to go back to war?
Well, Scott is right about that, and I'm getting increasingly worried. I've been worried since January, but I'm really getting to the point of almost being panicked at the fact that this president is showing more and more signs of dementia, of megalomania, of narcissism gone berserk, whatever the proper psychological and psychiatric terms are for it. He's showing that he can't make sound decisions, and he's showing that he ricochets all over the place. I know that's like, you know, saying a bullet ricochets, because he's been that way ever since he assumed the presidency, particularly this second term. But I think it's getting more acute now, and I think it's getting into stages of even desperation. So I'm really worried that we're going to have some things happen that are going to be extremely stupid and extremely dangerous for the empire. And it's going to be simply because he's not thinking properly. And I don't mean just in the new usual Trump mode. I mean, seriously, he's got problems. And there's no mechanism. This should be teaching us something. There is no mechanism that says you're mentally unstable, you're insane even, and we have a process for evaluating that. We have professionals to do it, and we will take you out of the White House if we determine that's the case. I know that sounds draconian and dramatic, but my God, what do we not do that in if someone is a CEO or whatever and is berserk? Why wouldn't we have that sort of process? We say, oh, we have the 25th Amendment. That's hogwash. The 25th Amendment is a lesson in exasperation. You're never going to get a cabinet to agree on eliminating their power head, and you're never going to get a two-thirds of the Congress to agree on that. So the 25th Amendment is a farce. We really do need something that determines whether a Ronald Reagan in his last year is not mentally competent, a Joe Biden in his last 2 years is not mentally competent, and a Donald Trump, perhaps since he started, is not mentally competent, but certainly now. And we need a process other than impeachment to step a president down and install the vice president. It's that simple. We don't have it. And it's, you know, it's really dramatically stupid not to have some kind of process like that.
Well, Colonel Wilkerson, with the two examples you bring up there of Reagan and Joe Biden, and I think maybe Woodrow Wilson could be another example of this, where at the end of their administration, they were mentally unsound, but they weren't still running the show, which it seems particularly more dangerous now because it, you know, with the Biden administration, it seemed like people like Antony Blinken and Susan Rice and others kind of just took charge, right? They gave Joe a bowl of ice cream and told him to sign whatever, and the country at least continued to operate in a somewhat normal fashion. Here, the administration seems to be letting Donald Trump run wild in his demented state. And I'm just wondering what you would do, because you were Colin Powell's chief of staff during the Bush administration. Had you been in a similar position or somewhere in the upper levels of the Trump administration, what could you do to either try to rein in the president, bring his administration? Like, what could somebody in your position do?
Well, believe it or not, we have had similar discussions in other administrations. One of them I remember very well when actually Henry Kissinger was president of the United States. For all intents and purposes in national security, he was president of the United States. Richard Nixon was drinking a half bottle or a bottle of Jack Daniels every day, starting about 3 p.m. in the afternoon when Watergate was full upon him. And Henry Kissinger was making most of the decisions. Now, here's the difference. Henry Kissinger was smart. We can disagree with some of the things he did and some of the decisions he made, but he was a smart man. I don't think anyone will disagree with that. And I've been up and close and personal with Henry Kissinger, and I know he was a smart man. I disagreed with some of the things he did too, but he was a smart man. Same with George W. Bush. There were people all around George W. Bush should he have gone off the deep end, if you will. He didn't, but if there were occasion, there were people all around him who were smart. Dick Cheney was smart. Donald Rumsfeld was smart. Colin Powell was smart. And the same goes for Ronald Reagan. And the same goes for Joe Biden, except I just really, like with Kissinger on occasion, disagreed with Jake Sullivan and Antony Blinken. But they ran the presidency. Donald Trump has no such person around him, period, other than perhaps the vice president. And I'm not even sure about him anymore after his Islamabad performance, if you will, where he was reporting as extensively, if not more so, to Bibi Netanyahu than he was to his own president. So I'd be worried if J.D. Vance were to take over, though I do think he is the only member of this administration competent to do so, as I was just discussing. Even if I agree with the people, they're competent to be president, and that's what should happen. Not happening here. Donald Trump is still pursuing power in an erratic, idiotic, dangerous, and ultimately empire-ending way if we're not careful and we don't, you know, somehow work out a way to deal with it. And I'm at a loss as anyone else as to how to deal with it. I know I think how it's going to be dealt with if we get into the midterms and they're free and fair and the Congress changes over. We're going to impeach him. And he's going to be the first American president in our history to be successfully removed from office by the impeachment process. Richard Nixon was very close, but when his own party went over to the White House with the articles of impeachment and he had a chance to read them, he realized he was going to be removed. And so he decided to resign rather than be the first president to be impeached. Donald Trump may well be the first president to be impeached, but he can do a lot of damage before that.
Absolutely. I want to bring up another one, Trump's very wild Truth Social post today. In this one, it's interesting. He claims that Iran is prepared to work with the United States in tandem inside the country of Iran he says Iran's nuclear dust that was created by her B-52 bombers. I'm guessing he's referring to what he believes is the damaged containers that hold Iran's 60% enriched uranium that were hit during Operation Midnight Hammer, but that Iran's prepared to give that to the United States. They're not going to be compensated in any way for it. They're just going to give it up, and then they're never going to enrich nuclear material in the future. Now, the other really interesting part of this post is he says that he has prohibited Israel from attacking Lebanon and said that enough is enough. So, is Donald Trump actually standing up to Benjamin Netanyahu here? Do you think he's seriously putting his foot down with the Israelis that no more war in Lebanon?
Well, this could be another one of those subterfuges, diplomatic or otherwise, that winds up being just cover for another attack by both men. I know Netanyahu is having a rough time with his own people right now because of what he's done with regard to Lebanon, and they don't like it. And this is both in his entourage and outside, like Naftali Bennett and others who want his job. So Netanyahu is in a crunch right here, right now, too. And I know President Aoun in Lebanon has essentially said he's not too happy with this as long as Israel continues to occupy territory north of the Litani River. And Netanyahu's let it be known that he ain't leaving anytime soon. So this has all got fracture points that could happen at any moment. But your point is well taken. Who's leading whom in this? And what's it going to eventuate in if it's Netanyahu leading, and what if it's Trump leading? Now, to your first point, however, I don't think men who are as sophisticated as Abbas Araghchi, the foreign minister, and the speaker of the Majlis, for that matter, and others, the president, too, in Iran, that they are, spellbound over Donald Trump. They have been ripped up and taken to the pantry and beaten in the middle of diplomacy twice, as Araghchi said in his remarks on the attack on Midlop School. They torpedoed diplomacy that we were involved in twice, not once, but twice. And he's right. So that they would believe us in anything, picking up dust, picking up radiation, helping them clean up what the B-2s did, that's all so much pipe dream in Trump's head, and so much generation of Twitter and other feeds by people like Laura Loomer and so forth, who seem to dominate Trump from time to time. So this is nonsense. And it's not going to eventuate in anything but more trouble, in my view.
So it seems that Israel immediately has started to test how serious Donald Trump was. After Trump made this statement, Israel carried out one drone attack in Lebanon, right, and killed one person in that attack. And, we've had reports over the past week or so that during the negotiations in Islamabad, J.D. Vance was calling Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu says that the U.S. officials report to him about all the updates every day on the war. And, you were in the Bush State Department. Is this common practice for the U.S. where if something is going on in the world, we're calling the Israelis, we're getting their input, we're letting them know everything that we're doing? Or is this an extreme amount of control that Israel has in this administration?
That's extreme in this administration. It's been getting worse, no question about it. Joe Biden, Tony Blinken, and Jake Sullivan. Blinken and Sullivan might as well have been on Netanyahu's staff. So that's how it got worse with Biden. And Biden always was, and as Powell used to say, inordinately predisposed towards Israel. So you can say that it began there, but Trump has taken it to a new level. And he's taken it to a new level in a way that makes me conclude almost 100% sure now that there's some agency he's providing for someone. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that Donald Trump is under such blackmail, and probably emanating from the Epstein scandals, that he is doing another country's wishes reluctantly, perhaps. He's making money off of it, so maybe not so reluctantly. But he's doing another country's wishes, not because that country has an AIPAC and has a Israel lobby and owns congressmen and others in this country, but he's doing it because he's scared of what's coming out with regard to himself and his wife, Melania. And that has got him traumatized to the point where he's going to do pretty much whatever Bibi Netanyahu asks him to do. It isn't Miriam Adelson's billions. It isn't any of this other support. And I've just come to this conclusion because I just can't understand how he's providing this degree of agency for a foreign power, so much so that it looks as if he can't escape it. And what really broke my back on this, what really convinced me that there's more to this than I thought, more to Epstein than I thought, was the New York Times story over how he made the decision to go to war in Iran. Almost no one of any consequence was in sync with him other than the sycophant Pete Hegseth. That's the only one in the administration. No one in the military, no one outside the military and the intelligence entities or other groups was really with him on this decision to go to war with Iran. Only Bibi Netanyahu was with him, and Bibi Netanyahu cast the final vote, apparently, too. So that tells me something. That tells me that there is agency that Trump is offering to Netanyahu, and he's offering it to him because he's frightened of what's in the Epstein files and what Bibi Netanyahu is holding over his head. That explains another thing about the Iran war, too, as stupid as it seemed in the beginning and continues to seem. That is that he'd do anything to distract the American people from going deeper into the Epstein files and perhaps discovering some of this. So we're in a situation that is absolutely dangerous for us in a very consequential way. And perhaps if Iran were to go to its second tier of targets, would be dangerous for the world. We're talking about recession by maybe June. We're talking about depression by September or October. If Iran hits its second tier of targets, which would disrupt world commerce on a global scale and almost overnight, because that's what their second tier of targets is aimed to do. They haven't done that. I don't think they want to do that. I don't think anyone in Iran wants to do that, anyone in the leadership, but they could. And that's how on the precipice we are right now with this. And I haven't even mentioned that China is getting increasingly angry at us. Russia is getting increasingly angry at us. And China and Russia together would whoop us in a minute. No question about it. There's no way we could stand up to them. We would be defeated roundly. And we would probably go to nuclear weapons because we will not take defeat. When we're defeated conventionally, we'll go to nuclear weapons. That's the clearest path to nuclear war, is to take the empire down so bad conventionally that it has to go to nuclear weapons, because there's no doubt in my mind we will do that.
Colonel Wilkerson, last question, and you brought up Pete Hegseth there, our Secretary of War. Over the past week, I mean, throughout this war, throughout his time as in the Pentagon, he's given some fairly alarming religious statements, but it's really hit its peak in the last week. He was comparing journalists to the bad guys in the Bible. He was giving a prayer about how God is going to help the U.S. smite our enemies. And then he also gave, I think, a sermon in the Pentagon where he misquoted the Bible and instead used the quote from Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction. I want to get some of your thoughts on this. I'm not a military guy. I've never been in the Pentagon. Maybe this is common. Maybe I'm making too much out of being alarmed by this. But it certainly seems like the war in Iran is a religious war. It just turns out that the fanatics are in Tel Aviv and Washington and not in Tehran.
I think you're absolutely right. And it is frightening what he's doing in the military. He's had 13 months now of prayer meetings. And these prayer meetings are very carefully crafted in terms of their invitation from the Secretary of War to the flag and general officers in the Pentagon and to the rank and file and to the civilians. Excuse me. And what they do is they put the flag officers, the generals and the admirals, in the front two rows every time, front two rows for them. That's so they can be observed just like they were observed at Quantico. Front two rows, and then the rest of the rows are filled in with the civilians and lower ranks and others who want to come, but you cannot come. You cannot, it's expressly said in this invitation, you cannot come if you aren't of the family if you aren't in the Pentagon, civilian or military. And anybody who says that this isn't coercion, anybody who says that this isn't a violation of the separation of church and state and a violation of people's rights within the Pentagon is just smoking some cheap stuff, because it is. People don't realize this isn't GE. This isn't Toyota. This isn't Ford Motor Company. This isn't even Lockheed Martin or RTX or one of the death merchants. This is the military. In the military, when you're given an order, you say, aye, sir, three bags full. Where do you want them? So this is not like, okay, come to my church for Sunday dinner or whatever. This is like an order, even though he couches it as not an order, so he won't be too unconstitutional in order to get someone's ire up pretty fast. So it's dangerous what he's doing, and he's preacher packing the ranks of the military too. What do I mean by preacher packing? That's an old South Carolina expression. You put the rotten strawberries on the bottom and the good strawberries on top. Let me give you a case in point. Congress prohibited him from enlisting any more than 4% of mental category 4 personnel. Now, this is people, if you're familiar with McNamara's 100,000 in Vietnam, same. These are people who can't even read their name on a guard roster. These are people who don't know what 2 plus 2 equals. Mental category 4. Congress said no more than 4%. He hired 11%. What did he do about it when the Army IG went over and told Congress what he'd done? Well, he said, I've created a test, and I give these guys and gals the test. And if they pass the test after I've given them the test, in other words, I teach them the test, you get that? I teach them the test. And after they pass the test the second or third time they take it, I elevate them to mental category 3. And then they're not mental category 4 anymore. But what I did was enlist 7% more than you authorized me to enlist. By this way, he stacks the lower ranks as well as fixing up the higher ranks by the sycophancy and firing and everything he's done up there of admirals, generals, and others. He's fixing up the lower ranks to be more susceptible to his wishes. And what we're looking at here is the potential for a civil war within the ranks of the military. You got some who are Christian nationalists, some who take their oath seriously to the Constitution, others who are told and believe it's good to take their oath to Jesus Christ and to a divine providence and to Christian nationalism. So this is really bad for good order, discipline, and morale within the military forces. But it serves a purpose, I think. The purpose is if you have to do something that Donald Trump asks you to do, after maybe he loses the midterm elections, or maybe we don't even have the midterm elections, then you have a military that's more compliant.
That is a very concerning path that I am worried this country is on. Colonel Wilkerson, thank you so much for your time on the show today. I really appreciate it. Everybody, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to the show, and we will be back with another round of shows next week.
Thanks, Kyle.